Blog Talk Radio.
Brother, break bread with me, brother. Got that pure cake, no butter, no sugar. Asiatic, straight like my brother's soul. Yes, indeed. 7-Up cake, we got pound cake. And we
some of that pound cake.
Yes, indeed, brother. There you go. Thank you, brother. You have a good day today. Salam.
Today I begin a new life, for I am the master of my abilities, and today is going to be a great and beautiful day.
What?
I said, today I begin a new life, for I am the master of my abilities, and today is going to be a great and beautiful day.
Pillows, goose down, $35.
T, you a buyer or a seller?
What? Videos, homie. Videos? DVDs? CDs? Master P? Charles Angel?
Look at yourself.
How many millionaires you got on, bruh? I count at least 3. Man, what the fuck are you talking about? P! Look around, man. You see what I see? I see money. Look at my man over there selling t-shirts. Brother over there selling pies and paper. Cake man over there. Everybody moving, making money. Right? While we standing still being broke. I figured all this shit out, man. All this. This whole world moves forward through transactions. Commerce, nigga. The exchange of goods and services. All the real baller successful folks are sellers. And all the broke ass people playing catch up are buyers. I ain't trying to go out like that, P. I'ma be a seller. I'ma get my own business. Change the game.
Change. It's gonna happen with or without. Sooner or later, if you don't embrace it, you'll be replaced by it. Whoever you are, wherever you are, it's time to face that mirror and make a change. Thank you. to the next level. We ask you to help us handle it. Never allow our business to handle us. This is our husband's prayer. As your son and daughter, let all know that you are in the blind.
Welcome to the Black Love Experience, hosted by inspiring author S. Dot, exclusively presented by the S. Dot Files.
y'all. Hip hop. It was born in the orphanage, bought like a slave back then, 1971, in the Bronx, y'all, on the west side. And it went worldwide. The movement we call hip hop, y'all. We got breakers, we got MCs, we got graffiti artists. Yes, indeed. Come on. And the big sound system, and the way we talk, the way you dress, and also the way you look.
You need to get it. Pete don't wanna love you the right way. He ain't gonna. It ain't where he's at. It's where he wanna be. Yeah.
Broadcasting live from NYC. What's good, people? It's your man, S-Dot. It is our duty, it is our responsibility as not just people of color, but as citizens of humanity. The objective is to inspire proactive people to productive activities. What's good, people? It's your man, S-Dot. My commitment, first and foremost, is to the restoration and rebuilding of the black family. Black on black love. What's good, people? It's your man, S-Dot. This is why it's important that we've got to get out of the window and start looking in the mirror. Black love is not a passive response. It is a declaration of warfare against those who desire to control and manipulate black men and black women and deprive them over their stewardship over the black family. What's good, people? It's your man, S-Dot. I remind you that this show is for constructive purposes only.
S-Dot has a get-it-done mindset when it comes to achieving. Sharing breakthrough strategies and overcoming solutions for everyday people, he is a communicator of change. S-Dot's most impressive credential is that he keeps it 100 and doesn't water down the whole truth and nothing but the truth. It is this refreshing forthrightness that enables him to speak with a right-now relevance to people from many walks of life. His can't stop, don't stop, won't stop attitude is infectious to those who have experienced this inspiring author, motivational speaker, and empowerment coach that is committed to helping those most in need succeed in love and life. Welcome to the Black Love Experience, hosted by inspiring author S-Dot, exclusively presented by the S-Dot Files.
Are you ready to get your mind right?
I hope you are, people. What's good? It's your man, S-Dot, back for another episode of the Black Love Experience. This is episode number 171. Today is Wednesday, April 24th, 2013. And as I said in the last episode, and I think it's worth repeating today, my mouth doesn't lead to your stomach. My hands don't tie your shoelaces. The person most responsible for you is you. A lot of people overlook this undeniable, unavoidable truth. They stand around waiting for others to make decisions they agree on. Then they become bitter and build up resentment against those who show and take initiative. Jealousy and envy begin to cloud their vision. Their eyes are just closed and staring at their eyelids, fixated on dreams. And when they open them, it's obvious change has come. But they have remained the same. They are stuck, shook, as Mobb Deep would say. Scared to death to look in the mirror of truth. Sound familiar? Remember, a dreamer must wake up. You can't rise to meet and defeat a challenge with closed eyes. The dreamer must open their eyes to become a visionary. A visionary shows discipline in doing, determination in pursuing, and due diligence in renewing their skill set as needed. They have tunnel vision, but remain mindful of the tunnel. It's exciting to know you're on the road to riches, but unwise to travel without a roadmap, spare tire, and other just-in-case-of-emergency necessities. That being said, on today's show, we're going to be listening to Chapter 3, excerpts from Chapter 3 from the book The 50th Law by hip-hop entrepreneur Curtis 50 Cent Jackson and author Robert Greene. So we're going to be listening into the book. I'm going to share some commentary, some thoughts that I gathered from listening. And the call-in number, for those of you who want to call in and who want to share, is 347-308-8527. Once again, the call-in number is 347-308-8527. It's Shanann Escott. We'll be back in a minute.
Didn't the sugar. Opportunism. Every negative situation contains the possibility for something positive, an opportunity. It's how you look at it that matters. Your lack of resources can be an advantage, forcing you to be more inventive with the little that you have. Losing a battle can allow you to frame yourself as the sympathetic underdog. Do not let fears make you wait for a better moment or become conservative. If there are circumstances you cannot control, make the best of them. It's the ultimate alchemy to transform all such negatives into advantages and power.
Events in life are not negative or positive. They are completely neutral. The universe does not care about your fate. It is indifferent to the violence that may hit you or to death itself. Things merely happen to you. It is your mind that chooses to interpret them as negative or positive. And because you have layers of fear that dwell deep within you, your natural tendency is to interpret temporary obstacles in your path as something larger, setbacks and crises. Instead of becoming discouraged and depressed by any kind of downturn, you must see this as a wake-up call, a challenge that you will transform into an opportunity for power. Your energy levels rise. You move to the attack, surprising your enemies with boldness. You care less what people think about you, and this paradoxically causes them to admire you. The negative publicity is turned around. You do not wait for things to get better. You seize this chance to prove yourself. Mentally framing a negative event as a blessing in disguise makes it easier for you to move forward. It is a kind of mental alchemy, transforming shit into sugar. We come to feel that we naturally deserve good things, that we have certain privileges due to us. You must adopt an attitude that is the opposite to how most people think and operate. When things are going well, that is precisely when you must be concerned and vigilant. You know it will not last, and you will not be caught unprepared. When things are going badly, that is when you are most encouraged and fearless. Finally, you have material for a powerful reversal, a chance to prove yourself. It is only out of danger and difficulty that you can rise at all. By simply embracing the moment as something positive and necessary, you have already converted it into gold. Our minds possess powers we have not even begun to tap into. These powers come from a mix of heightened concentration, energy, and ingenuity in the face of obstacles. Each of us has the capacity to develop these powers, but first, we have to be aware of their existence. This is difficult, however, in a culture that emphasizes material means, technology, money, connections, as the answer to everything. We place unnecessary limits on what the mind can accomplish, and that becomes our reality. Look at our concept of opportunity, and you will see this in its clearest light. According to conventional wisdom, an opportunity is something that exists out there in the world. If it comes our way and we seize it, it brings us money and power. This could be a particular job, the perfect fit for us. It could be a chance to create or join a new venture. It could be meeting the appropriate person. In any event, it depends on being at the right place at the right time and having the proper skills to take advantage of this propitious moment. We generally believe there are only a few such golden chances in life, and most of us are waiting for them to cross our path. This concept is extremely limited in scope. It makes us dependent on outside forces. It stems from a fearful, passive attitude towards life that is counterproductive. It constrains our minds to a small circle of possibility. The truth is that for the human mind, everything that crosses its path can be a potential tool for power and expansion. Many of us have had the following experience. We find ourselves in an urgent, difficult situation. Perhaps we have to get something done in an impossibly short amount of time, or someone we had counted on for help does not come through, or we are in a foreign land and must suddenly fend for ourselves. In these situations, necessity crowds in on us. We have to get work done and figure out problems quickly, or we suffer immediate consequences. What usually happens is that our minds snap to attention. We find the necessary energy because we have to. We pay attention to details that normally elude us because they might spell the difference between success and failure, life and death. We are surprised at how inventive we become. It is at such moments that we get a glimpse of that potential mental power within us that generally lies untapped. An opportunist in life sees all hindrances as instruments for power. The reason is simple. Negative energy that comes at you in some form is energy that can be turned around to defeat an opponent and lift you up. When there is no such energy, there is nothing to react or push against. It is harder to motivate yourself. Enemies that hit you have opened themselves up to a counterattack in which you control the timing and the dynamic. If bad publicity comes your way, think of it as a form of negative attention that you can easily reframe for your purposes. You can seem contrite or rebellious, whatever will stir up your base. If you ignore it, you look guilty. If you fight it, you seem defensive. If you go with it and channel it in your direction, you have turned it into an opportunity for positive attention. In general, obstacles force your mind to focus and find ways around them. They heighten your mental powers and should be welcomed. Look for any sudden successes or failures in the business world that people find hard to explain. These are often indications of shifts going on under the surface. Perhaps someone has inadvertently hit upon a new model for doing things, and you must analyze this. Examine the greatest anxieties of those on the inside of any business or industry. Deep changes going on usually register as fear to those who do not know how to deal with them. You can be the first to exploit such changes for positive purposes. Keep your eye out for any kind of shifts in tastes or values. People in the media or the establishment will often rail against these changes, seeing them as signs of moral decline and chaos. People fear the new. You can turn this into an opportunity by being the first to give some meaning to this apparent disorder, establishing it as a positive value. You are not looking for fads, but deep-rooted changes in people's tastes. One opportunity you can always bank on is that a younger generation will react against the sacred cows of the older generation. If the older set valued spontaneity and pleasure, you can be sure that the younger set will crave order and orthodoxy. By attacking the values of the older generation before anyone else, you can gain powerful attention. Most people wait too long to go into action, generally out of fear. They want more money or better circumstances. You must go the opposite direction and move before you think you are ready. It is as if you are making it a little more difficult for yourself, deliberately creating obstacles in your path. But it is a law of power that your energy will always rise to the appropriate level. When you feel that you must work harder to get to your goal because you are not quite prepared, you are more alert and inventive. This venture has to succeed, and so it will. In modern usage, opportunist is generally a derogatory term that refers to people who will do anything for themselves. They have no core values beyond promoting their own needs. They contribute nothing to society. This, however, is a misreading of the phenomenon and stems from an age-old elitism that wants to see opportunities kept as privileges for a powerful few. Those from the bottom who dare to promote themselves in any way are seen as Machiavellian, while those already on the top who practice the same strategies are merely smart and resourceful. Such judgments are a reflection of fear. In this philosophy, every event is seen as fated to occur. When you complain and rail against circumstances, you fall out of balance with the natural state of things. You wish things were different. What you must do instead is accept the fact that all events occur for a reason, and that it is within your capacity to see this reason as positive. Marcus Aurelius compared this to a fire that consumes everything in its path. All circumstances become consumed in your mental heat and converted into opportunities. A man or woman who believes this cannot be hurt by anything or anyone.
All right. What's good, people? It's your man, F. Dot. We are delving into the book, The 50th Law, by Curtis 50 Cent Jackson and author Robert Greene. And one of the things that strikes me about this particular chapter, Shit to Sugar, is that I'm from Brooklyn, you know. And being from Brooklyn, I learned early in life the importance of being able to adapt and advance. Being from Brooklyn taught me how to fit in when it was required, to listen and learn. And being from Brooklyn taught me how to stand out, speak up, and lead when an opportunity is presented. It's like when I think about, for instance, a lot of people oftentimes confuse rap and hip-hop, you know. Rap is an expressive element of hip-hop, whereas hip-hop is a consciousness mindset. And one of the foundational pillars of hip-hop is entrepreneurship, the ability to turn lemon into lemonade or shit into sugar. I was thinking about a quote from 50 Cent in which he says, "Ambition is a tunnel that you run through that doesn't end." When you grow up inspired by hip-hop as a culture, not just someone who listens to rap as a music, but inspired by hip-hop as a culture that frames your consciousness for the paradigm and how you look at you and interact with the world, you recognize that the basis of hip-hop and its infancy and how it was created was it was an amalgamation of many different genres that were brought together as a result and in response to the fact that many of us who grew up in New York City, during the 70s and the 80s, we experienced the backlog of many of our parents and older siblings getting involved with heroin. Many of them came home from Vietnam strung out on heroin and other various other drugs. And during the 70s was a big time for a lot of disco music, which was a fast-paced lifestyle in New York City. And that, of course, had its own outgrowth of drug usage, LSD, cocaine, and so forth. So that many, and then on an educational level, many of us who were the children of civil rights activists and those who were involved in the Black Power movement of the 70s, we may have seen our older brothers and sisters, aunts, uncles, and parents engaged in that behavior. And we watched their efforts, and many of us recognize that a lot of the resources that should have been available to us were dwindling. For instance, particularly during the 80s when Reagan became president, music was something that began to disappear from the curriculum. It used to be, I know that during the 70s, we had music classes and so forth. We learned to play instruments and things of that nature. When the 80s came, many of those music classes were all but gone. A lot of the after-school activities were all but gone. And as a result of this, a lot of young people didn't have a lot of avenues to express themselves. So for many of us, we had to turn the shit that we were given into sugar. We had to dig in those crates of our parents and older siblings, and we discovered portions of records, which we now call breakbeats. Back then it was just a break, which we then would blend together as a sonic backdrop for us to share a narrative of our lives as we were living them on a day-to-day basis. That is the ingenuity of hip-hop. That is the creativity of hip-hop. I hear a lot of criticisms of a lot of the music of today. I oftentimes have criticism of some of the music today that is classified as hip-hop. Most of my criticism is leveled at the fact that I see that there is a lot of cookie-cutter type of content that is being put out, and that there are very, very talented artists that are out there. But unfortunately, because the way that the structure is set in place, many people don't get exposed to a lot more of the more dynamic, creative artists. But I've met some phenomenally talented young artists in all facets of music, and particularly in the genre of hip-hop, who just for various reasons don't get that level of exposure. And when you are engaged in hip-hop as a cultural paradigm for how you frame your day-to-day life, you come to recognize that you've got to not just get in where you fit in, but remember that you have to stand out if you truly want to be noticed. There are far too many people who oftentimes want to be the next so-and-so rather than the first themselves, whoever they may be. You know, I want to read a bit from the book, from chapter 3. And it says, Hood Alchemy. If one is continually surviving the worst that life can bring, one eventually ceases to be controlled by a fear of what life can bring. James Baldwin. For well over a year, 50 Cent had been working on what was meant to be his debut album, Power of the Dollar. and finally in the spring of 2000, it was ready to be released by Columbia Records. It represented to him all the struggles he had been through on the streets, and he had hopes that it would turn his life around for good. In May of that year, however, a few weeks before the launch date, a hired assassin shot 9 bullets into him while he sat in the back seat of a car, one bullet going through his jaw and nearly killing him. In a flash, all the momentum he had built up reversed itself. Columbia canceled the release of the record and dropped 50 from his contract. There was too much violence associated with him. It was bad for business. A few inquiries made it clear that other labels felt the same. He was being blackballed from the industry. One executive told him flatly he would have to wait at least 2 years before he could think of resurrecting his career. The assassination attempt was the result of an old drug beef from his days as a dealer. The killers could not afford to let him survive and would try to finish the job. 50 had to keep a low profile. At the same time, he had no money and could not return to street hustling. Even many of his friends who had hoped to be part of his success as a rapper started to avoid him. In just a few short weeks, he had gone from being poised for fame and fortune to hitting the bottom, and there seemed no way to move out of the corner he found himself in. Could this be the end of all his efforts? It would have been better to die that day than to feel his powerlessness. But as he lay in the bed at his grandmother's house, recovering from the wounds, he listened to a lot of radio, and what he heard gave him an incredible rush of optimism. An idea started taking shape in his mind, that the shooting was in fact a great blessing in disguise, that he had narrowly survived for a reason. The music on the radio was also packaged and produced. Even the tough stuff, the gangster rap, was fake. The lyrics did not reflect anything from the streets that he knew. The attempt to pass it off as real and urban angered him to a point he could not endure. This was not the time for him to be afraid and depressed or to sit around and wait.
Fitting the sugar. Opportunism. Every negative situation can...
Okay. Or to wait a few years while all of the violence around him died down. He had never been a fake studio gangster, and now he had the 9 bullet wounds to prove it. This was the moment to convert all of his anger and dark emotions into a powerful campaign that would shape the very foundations of hip-hop. As a hustler on the streets, 50 had learned a fundamental lesson. Access to money and resources is severely limited in the hood. A hustler must transform every little event and every trifling object into some gimmick for making money. Even the worst shit that happens to you can be converted into gold if you are clever enough. All of the negative factors now facing him, little money, no connection, the price on his head, could be turned into their opposite, advantages and opportunities. That is how he would confront the seemingly insurmountable obstacles now in his path. He decided to disappear for a few months and hold up in various friends' houses. He began to recreate himself in his music career. With no executives to have to please or worry about, he could push his lyrics and the hard sounds as far as he wanted. His voice had changed as a result of the pieces of bullets still lodged in his tongue. It now had a hit. It was still painful for him to move his mouth, so he had to rap more slowly. Instead of trying to normalize and retrain his voice, he determined to turn it into a virtue. His new style of rapping would be more deliberate and menacing. That hiss would remind listeners of the bullet that had gone through his jaw. He would play all of that up. In the summer of 2001, just as people had begun to forget about him, 50 suddenly realized his first song to the streets. It was called, first released his first song to the streets. It was called Fuck You. The title and the lyrics summarizing how he felt about his killing, his killers, and everyone who wanted him to go away. Just putting out the song was message enough. he was defying his assassins openly and publicly. 50 was back, and to shut him up, they would have to finish the job. The palpable anger in his voice and the hard-driving sound of the song made it a sensation on the street. It also came with an added punch, because he seemed to invite it, he invited more violence. The public had to grab up everything he produced before he was killed. The life and death angle made for a compelling spectacle. Now the song started to pour out of him. He fed off all the anger he felt and the doubts people had about him. He was also consumed with a sense of urgency. This was his last chance to make it. And so he worked night and day. 50's mixtapes began to hit the street at a furious pace. Soon he realized the greatest advantage he possessed in this campaign, the feeling that he had already hit bottom and had nothing to lose. He could attack the record industry and poke fun at its timidity. He could pirate the most popular songs on the radio and put his own lyrics over them to create wicked parodies. He didn't care about the consequences, and the further he took this, the more his audiences responded. They loved the transgressive edge to it. It was like a crusade against all the fake crap on the radio, and to listen to 50 was to participate in the cause. On and on he went, transforming every conceivable negative into a positive. To compensate for the lack of money to distribute his mixtapes far and wide, he decided to encourage bootleggers to pirate his tracks and spread his music around like a virus. With the price still on his head, he could not give concerts or do any kind of public promotion. But somehow he turned even this into a marketing device. Hearing his music everywhere but not being able to see him only added to the mystique and the attention people paid to him. Rumors and word of mouth helped form a kind of 50 mythology. He made himself even scarier to feed this process. The momentum now was devastating. You could not go far in New York without hearing his music blasted from some corner. Some of his mixtapes reached the ears of Eminem, who decided this was the future of hip-hop and quickly signed 50 in early 2003 to his and Dr. Dre's label, Shady Aftermath, completing one of the most rapid and remarkable turnarounds and fortunes in modern history. The fearless approach. Every negative is a positive. The bad things that happen to me, I somehow make them good. That means you can't do anything to hurt me. 50 Cent. And now, Chapter 4.
Chapter 4. Keep moving. Calculated momentum. In the present, there is constant change, and so much we cannot control. If you try to micromanage it all, you lose even greater control in the long run. The answer is to let go and move with the chaos that presents itself to you. From within it, you will find endless opportunities that elude most people. Don't give others the chance to pin you down. Keep moving and changing your appearances to fit the environment. If you encounter walls or boundaries, slip around them. Do not let anything disrupt your flow.
As infants, we were surrounded by many things that were unfamiliar and unpredictable. People acting in ways that did not make sense, events that were hard to figure out. This was the source of great anxiety. We wanted the world around us to be more familiar. What was not so predictable became associated in our minds with darkness and chaos, something to dread. Out of this fear, a desire was born deep inside of us to somehow gain greater control over the people and events that eluded our grasp. The only way we knew how to do this was to grab and hold, to push and pull, exerting our will in as direct a manner as possible to get people to do what we wanted. Over the years, this can become a lifelong pattern of behavior, more subtle as an adult, but infantile at heart. Every individual we come across in life is unique, with his or her own energy, desires, and history. But wanting more control over people, our first impulse is generally to try to push them into conforming to our moods and ideas, into acting in ways that are familiar and comfortable to us. Every circumstance in life is different, but this elicits that old fear of chaos and the unknown. We cannot physically make events more predictable, but we can internally create a feeling of greater control by holding on to certain ideas and beliefs that give us a sense of consistency and order. This hunger for control, common to all of us, is the root of so many problems in life. Staying true to the same ideas and ways of doing things makes it that much harder for us to adapt to the inevitable changes in life. If we try to dominate a situation with some kind of aggressive action, this becomes our only option. We cannot give in or adapt or bide our time. That would mean letting go of our grip, and we fear that. Having such narrow options makes it hard to solve problems. Forcing people to do what we want makes them resentful. Inevitably, they sabotage us or assert themselves against our will. What we find is that our desire to micromanage the world around us comes with a paradoxical effect. The harder we try to control things in our immediate environment, the more likely we are to lose control in the long run. Most people tend to think of these forms of direct control as power itself, something that shows strength, consistency, or character. But in fact, the opposite is the case. They are forms of power that are infantile and weak, stemming from that deep-rooted fear of change and chaos. Before it is too late, you need to convert to a more sophisticated, fearless concept of power, one that emphasizes fluidity. Life has a particular pace and rhythm, an endless stream of changes that can move slowly or quickly. When you try to stop this flow mentally or physically by holding on to things or people, you fall behind. Your actions become awkward because they are not in relation to present circumstances. It is like moving against a current as opposed to using it to propel you forward. The first and most important step is to let go of this need to control in such a direct manner. This means that you no longer see change in chaotic moments in life as something to fear, but rather as a source of excitement and opportunity. In a social situation in which you want the ability to influence people, your first move is to bend to their different energies. You see what they bring, and you adapt to this, then find a way to divert their energy in your direction. You let go of the past way of doing things and adapt your strategies to the ever-flowing present. Often what seems like chaos to us is merely a series of events that are new and hard to figure out. You cannot make sense of this apparent disorder if you are reactive and fearful, trying to make everything conform to patterns that exist only in your mind. By absorbing more of these chaotic moments with an open spirit, you can glimpse a pattern, a reason why they are occurring, and how you can exploit them. As part of this new concept, you are replacing the old stalwart symbols of power, the rock, the oak tree, etc., with that of water, the element that has the greatest potential force in all of nature. Water can adapt to whatever comes its way, moving around or over any obstacle. It wears away rock over time. This form of power does not mean you simply give in to what life brings you and drift. It means that you channel the flow of events in your direction, letting this add to the force of your actions and giving you powerful momentum. All of us have experienced at some point in our lives a feeling of momentum. Perhaps we do something that strikes a chord and we get recognized for it. This positive attention fills us with unusual confidence, which in turn attracts people to us. Now brimming with self-belief, we are able to pull off another good action. Even if it is not so perfect, people will now tend to overlook the rough patches. We have the aura of success about us. So many times in life, one good thing seems to follow another. This will go on until inevitably we disrupt the flow. Perhaps we overreach with an action that breaks the spell, or we keep repeating the same things and people grow tired of us and move on to someone else. In the midst of any run of momentum, we generally feel more open. We allow ourselves to be carried along. The confidence we have when things are going well makes people get out of our way or join our side, giving our actions added force. Sometimes a feeling of urgency, we have to get something done, pushes us to act in a particularly energetic manner, and this starts a good run. This is often accompanied with a feeling that we have little to lose by trying something bold. Perhaps feeling somewhat desperate, we loosen up and experiment. What ties this all together is that something inside of us opens up and we allow a greater range of motion. Our style becomes freer and bolder, and we move with the current. On the other hand, when a run of momentum ends, it is usually from something we do, a kind of unconscious self-sabotage. We react against this loosening up out of some fear of where it could lead us. We become conservative, and the flow of energy stops, slowly reversing itself into stasis and depression. In many ways, we are the ones in control of this phenomenon, but it does not operate on a conscious enough level. Understand, momentum in life comes from increased fluidity, a willingness to try more, to move in a less constricted fashion. On many levels, it remains something hard to put into words, but understanding the process, becoming more conscious of the elements involved, you can place your mind in a readied position, better able to exploit any positive movement in your life. Call this calculated momentum. For this purpose, you must practice and master the following four types of flow. By nature, we are emotional creatures. It is how we primarily react to events. Only afterwards are we able to see that such emotional responses can be destructive and need to be reined in. What you want is for these endless emotions that assail you during the day to wash over you, to never hold on to one single emotion for very long. You are able to let go of any kind of obsessive feeling. If someone says something that bothers you, you find a way to move quickly past the feeling, either to excuse what they said, to make it less important, or to forget. Forgetting is a skill that you must develop in order to have emotional flow. If you cannot help but feel anger or disgust in the moment, make it a point to not let it remain the following day. When you hold on to emotions like that, it is as if you put blinders on your eyes. For that amount of time, you see and feel only what this emotion dictates, falling behind events. Your mind stops on feelings of failure, disappointment, and mistrust, giving you that awkwardness of someone out of tune with the moment. Without realizing it, all of your strategies become infected by these feelings, pushing you off course. When you are fearful, force yourself to act in a bolder fashion than usual. When you feel inordinate hate, find some object of love or admiration that you can focus on with intensity. One strong emotion tends to cancel out the other and help you move past it. You must find a way to periodically reinvent yourself. You are not trying to mimic the latest trend. That will make you look equally ludicrous. You are simply rediscovering that youthful attentiveness to what is happening around you and incorporating what you like into a newer spirit. You are taking pleasure in shaping your personality, wearing a new mask. The only thing you really have to fear is becoming a social and cultural relic. Those who remain true to some idea or value without self-examination often prove to be the worst tyrants in life. They make others conform to dead concepts. They are negative forces, holding back the change that is necessary for any culture to evolve and prosper. This is how you must operate. You actively work to overcome this fixed nature, deliberately trying a different approach and style than your usual one, to get a sense of a different possibility. You come to view periods of stability and order with mistrust. Something isn't moving in your life and in your mind. On the other hand, moments of change and apparent chaos are what you thrive on. They make your mind and spirit jump to life. If you reach such a point, you have tremendous power. You have nothing to fear from moments of transition. You welcome, even create them. Whenever you feel rooted and established in place, that is when you should be truly afraid.
Chapter 5. Know when to be bad. Aggression. You will always find yourself among the aggressive and the passive-aggressive who seek to harm you in some way. You must get over any general fears you have of confronting people, or you will find it extremely difficult to assert yourself in the face of those who are more cunning and ruthless. Before it is too late, you must master the art of knowing when and how to be bad, using deception, manipulation, and outright force at the appropriate moments. Everyone operates with a flexible morality when it comes to their self-interest. You are simply making this more conscious and effective.
Talent and good intentions are never enough in this world. You need to be fearless and strategic. Is to realize that the ability to deal with conflict is a function of inner strength versus fear, and that it has nothing to do with goodness or badness. When you feel weak and afraid, you have the sense that you cannot handle any kind of confrontation. You might fall apart or lose control or get hurt. Better to keep everything smooth and even. Your main goal, then, is to be liked, which becomes a kind of defensive shield. So much of what passes for good and nice behavior is really a reflection of deep fears. What you want instead is to feel secure and strong from within. You are willing to occasionally displease people, and you are comfortable in taking on those who stand against your interests. From such a position of strength, you are able to handle friction in an effective manner, being bad when it is appropriate. This means that in your daily life, you must assert yourself more than usual. You take on an aggressor instead of avoiding him. You strategize and push for something you want instead of waiting for someone to give it to you. You will generally notice that your fears have exaggerated the consequences of this kind of behavior. You are sending signals to others that you have limits they cannot cross, that you have interests you are willing to defend or advance, and there is no room for being naive or waiting for good things to happen. You learn to take what you need and feel no guilt about it. If you have dreams and ambitions, you know that to realize them you have to get active, make some noise, bruise a few people in your path, and you expect others to do the same to you. It is human nature, and instead of complaining, you simply must get better at protecting yourself. When you submit in spirit to aggressors or to an unjust and impossible situation, you do not buy yourself any real peace. You encourage people to go further, to take more from you, to use you for their own purposes. They sense your lack of self-respect, and they feel justified in mistreating you. When you are humble, you reap the wages of humility. You must develop the opposite, a fighting stance that comes from deep within and cannot be shaken. You force some respect. By a paradoxical law of human nature, trying to please people less will make them more likely in the long run to respect and treat you better. A prince or leader must first and foremost be effective in his actions, and to do so, he must master the art of knowing when and how to be bad. Aggressors. If you meet them head-on, you are forced to fight on their terms. Unless you happen to be an aggressive type, you are generally at a disadvantage against those who have simple ideas and fierce energy. It is best to fight them in an indirect manner, concealing your intentions and doing what you can behind the scenes, hidden from the public, to create obstacles and sow confusion. Instead of reacting, you must give aggressors some space to go further with their attacks. getting them to expose themselves in the process and provide you plenty of juicy targets to hit. If you become too active and forceful in response, you look defensive. Passive aggressors. These types are masters at disguise. They present themselves as weak and helpless, or highly moral and righteous, or friendly and ingratiating. This makes them hard to pick out at first glance. They send all kinds of mixed signals, alternating between friendly, cool, and hostile, creating confusion and conflicting emotions. If you try to call them on their behavior, they use this confusion to make you feel guilty, as if you were the one who was the source of the problem. Once you are drawn into their dramas, with your emotions engaged, it can be very difficult to detach yourself. The key is recognizing them in time to take appropriate action. Life naturally involves conflicting interests. People have their own issues, their own agendas, and they collide with yours. Instead of taking this personally or concerning yourself with people's intentions, you must simply work to protect and advance yourself in this competitive game, this bloody arena. Focus your attention on their maneuvers and how to deflect them. When you have to resort to something that isn't conventionally moral, it is just another maneuver you are executing in the game. Nothing to feel guilty about. You accept human nature and the idea that people will resort to aggression. This calm, detached perspective will make it that much easier to design the perfect strategy for blunting their aggression. With your emotions unscathed by these battles, you will grow accustomed to them and will even take some pleasure in fighting them well.
Chapter 6. Lead from the front, authority. In any group, the person on top consciously or unconsciously sets the tone. If leaders are fearful, hesitant to take any risk, or overly concerned with their egos and reputation, then this invariably filters its way through the entire group and makes effective action impossible. Complaining and haranguing people to work harder has a counterproductive effect. You must adopt the opposite style. Imbue your troops with the proper spirit through your actions, not words. They see you working harder than anyone, holding yourself to the highest standards, taking risks with confidence, and making tough decisions. This inspires and binds the group together. In these democratic times, you must practice what you preach.
Throughout history, we have witnessed the following pattern. Certain people stand out from the crowd because of some special skill or talent that they have. Perhaps they are masters at the political game, knowing how to charm and win the proper allies. Or maybe they have superior technical knowledge in their field. Or maybe they are the ones who initiate some bold venture that has success. In any event, these types suddenly find themselves in leadership positions, something for which their past experience and education has not prepared them. And what inevitably happens is that many of them unconsciously succumb to all kinds of fears. Whereas before they might have been bold and creative, now they grow cautious and conservative, aware of the heightened stakes. Secretly scared of being held accountable for the success of the group, they over-delegate, poll everyone for their opinions, or refrain from making the hard decisions. Or they become excessively dictatorial, trying to control everything, another sign of weakness and insecurity. Such types come to understand in various ways that a leader has a unique power that generally goes untapped. Any group tends to assume the spirit and energy of the person on top. If that person is weak and passive, then the group tends to splinter into factions. If such leaders lack confidence, their insecurities tend to filter their way down the line. Their nervous, fretful moods put everyone on edge. But there is always the opposite possibility. A leader who is audacious, out in front, and setting the tone and agenda for the group sparks a higher energy level and confidence. Such a person on top does not need to yell or push people around. Those below want to follow his or her lead because it is strong and inspiring, To gain respect from your peers, you must repeatedly prove yourself. People are constantly prone to doubting your abilities and your power. You must show again and again that you have what it takes to thrive and to last. Big words and promises mean nothing. Only actions carry weight. If you are authentic, as tough as you seem to be, then you will earn the respect that will make people back off and make your life that much easier. This should be your perspective as well. You start with nothing in this world. Any titles, money, or privilege you inherit are actually hindrances. They delude you into believing you are owed respect. If you continue to impose your will because of such privileges, people will come to disdain and despise you. Instead, only your actions can prove your worth. They tell people who you are. You must imagine that you are continually being challenged to show that you deserve the position you occupy. In a culture full of fakery and hype, you will stand out as someone authentic and worthy of respect. It is much better to be feared and respected than to be loved. If you build a reputation for toughness and getting results, people might resent you, but you will establish a foundation of respect. You are demonstrating genuine qualities of leadership that speak to everyone. Now, with time and a well-founded authority, you have room to back off and reward people, even to be nice. When you do so, it will be seen as a genuine gesture, not an attempt to get people to like you, and it will have double the effect. We moderns believe we have moved far beyond our primitive tribal origins. After all, we live in a secular, rational world. A leader today needs to possess certain technical and managerial skills. Whereas before, we humans might think first of the tribe, we now think primarily of ourselves, our careers, and our narrow interests. Office politics is the extreme endpoint of this trend. We are now more distracted than ever, with thousands of bits of information competing for our attention in the course of a day. This makes us less patient and capable of seeing the larger picture. Thinking ahead requires a particular thought process that comes with practice. It means seeing something practical and achievable several years down the road and mapping out how this goal can be achieved. It means thinking in branches, coming up with several paths to get there, depending on circumstances. It means being emotionally attached to this idea, so that when a thousand distractions and interruptions seem to push you off course, you have the strength and purpose to keep at it. You, as the leader, are the only bulwark against this endless wandering. You must have the strength to stamp the group with your own personality and vision, giving it a core and an identity. If you lose sight of the larger picture, then only bad things will ensue. The natural dynamic of any group is to splinter into factions. People want to protect and promote their narrow interests, so they form political alliances from within. If you force them to unite under your leadership, stamping out their factions, you may take control, but it will come with great resentment. They will naturally suspect you are increasing your power at their expense. If you do nothing, you will find yourself surrounded by lords and dukes who will make your job impossible. You cannot control a large group on your own. You will turn into a micromanager or dictator, making yourself exhausted and hated. You need to develop a team of lieutenants who are infused with your ideas, your spirit, and your values. Once you have such a team, you can give them latitude to operate on their own, learning for themselves and bringing their own creativity to the cause. You are seen as more than just a leader. You are a role model, instructing, energizing, and inspiring your lieutenants. In crafting this team, look for people who share your values and are open to learning. Do not be seduced by a glittering resume. You want them near you to absorb your spirit and ways of doing things. Once you feel they have the proper training, you must not be afraid to let go of the reins and give them more independence. In the end, this will save you much energy and allow you to continue focusing on the greater strategic picture. A person who creates something new. This could be a work of art, a new way of operating in the world, or new values. The health of any society depends on those who infuse it with such innovations. These works or actions by individuals give them credibility and authority to do more. Despite the spirit of the times, people have a secret yearning to be guided by a firm hand, by someone who knows where they are going. It is distressful to always feel distracted and wandering. The members of your group will give you the respect and authority you require if you earn it as an author and creator. In the end, if people mistrust and resist your authority, you really have only yourself to blame.
Chapter 7. Know your environment from the inside out. Connection. Most people think first of what they want to express or make, then find an audience for their idea. You must work the opposite angle, thinking first of the public. You need to keep your focus on their changing needs, the trends that are washing through them. Beginning with their demand, you create the appropriate supply. Do not be afraid of people's criticism. Without such feedback, your work will be too personal and delusional. You must maintain as close a relationship to your environment as possible, getting an inside feel for what is happening around you. Never lose touch with your base.
All living creatures depend for their survival on their relationship to their environment. If they are particularly sensitive to any kind of change, a danger, or an opportunity, they have greater power to dominate their surroundings. We live in an environment that is mostly human. It consists of the people that we interact with day in and day out. These humans come from many varied backgrounds and cultures. They are individuals with their own unique experiences. To know people well, their differences, their nuances, their emotional life, would give us a great sense of connection and power. We would know how to reach them, communicate more effectively, and influence their actions. But so often, we remain on the outside and lack this power. To connect to the environment in this way would mean having to move outside ourselves, train our eyes on people, but so often we prefer to live in our heads, amid our own thoughts and dreams. We strive to make everything in the world familiar and simple. We grow insensitive to people's differences, to the details that make them individuals. It begins with a fundamental fearlessness. You do not feel afraid or affronted by people who have different ways of thinking or acting. You do not feel superior to those on the outside. In fact, you are excited by such diversity. Your first move is to open up your spirit to these differences, to understand what makes the other tick, to gain a feel for people's inner lives, how they see the world. In this way, you continually expose yourself to wider and wider circles of people, building connections to these various networks. The source of your power is your sensitivity and closeness to this social environment. You can detect trends and changes in people's tastes well before anyone else. Any power you have depends on your ability to know everything that is going on around you, to be sensitive to changes, aware of the power structures that are imposed from without and within. There is no time or room to escape to some inner dreamland. You have a sense of urgency to stay connected to the environment and the people around you. Your life depends on it. But because we live in a society of more apparent abundance and ease, we lack that sense of urgency to connect to other people. This is dangerous. In such a melting pot as the modern world, with people's tastes changing at a faster pace than ever before, our success depends on our ability to move outside ourselves and connect to other social networks. At all costs, you need to continually force yourself outward. you must reach a point where any sense of losing this connection to your environment translates into a feeling of vulnerability and peril. Sometimes we ourselves produce something that works, but we fail to understand why, and lacking this knowledge, we cannot reproduce our success. There is an aspect to this phenomenon, however, that is explicable. Anything we create or produce is for a public, large or small, depending on what we do. If we are the type that lives mostly in our heads, imagining what the intended public will like, or not even caring, this spirit is reproduced in the work itself. It is disconnected from the social environment. It is a product of a person who is wrapped up in him or herself. If, on the other hand, we are deeply connected to the public, if we have a profound sense of their needs and wants, then what we make tends to resonate. We have internalized the way of thinking and feeling of our audience, and it shows in the work. Understand, you cannot disguise your attitude towards the public. If you feel superior at all, part of some chosen elite, then this seeps out in the work. It is conveyed in the tone and mood. It feels patronizing. If you have little access to the public you are trying to reach, but you feel that the ideas in your head cannot fail to be interesting, then it almost inevitably comes across as something too personal, the product of someone who is alienated. We are social creatures who make things in order to communicate and connect with those around us. Your goal must be to break down the distance between you and your audience, the base of your support in life. Some of this distance is mental. It comes from your ego and the need to feel superior. Some of it is physical. The nature of your business tends to shut you off from the public, with layers of bureaucracy. In any event, what you are seeking is maximum interaction, allowing you to get a feel for people from the inside. You come to thrive off their feedback and criticism. Operating this way, what you produce will not fail to resonate, because it will come from the inside. This deep level of interaction is the source of the most powerful and popular works in culture and business, and a political style that truly connects. Understand, in this day and age, to reach people you must have access to their inner lives, their frustrations, aspirations, resentments. To do so, you must crush as much distance as possible between you and your audience. You enter their spirit and absorb it from within. Their way of looking at things becomes yours, and when you recreate it in some form of work, it has life. What shocks and excites you will then have the same effect on them. This requires a degree of fearlessness and an open spirit. You are not afraid to have your whole personality shaped by these intense interactions. You assume a radical equality with the public, giving voice to people's ideas and desires. What you produce will naturally connect in a deep way. We see the following occur over and over. A person has success when they are younger because they have deep ties with a social group. What they produce and say comes from a real place and connects with an audience. Then slowly they lose this connection. Success creates distance. They come to spend most of their time with other successful people. Consciously or unconsciously, they come to feel separated and above their audience. The intensity in their work is gone, and with it, any kind of real effect on the public. The goal in connecting to the public is not to please everyone or to spread yourself out to the widest possible audience. Communication is a power of intensity, not extensity and numbers. In trying to widen your appeal, you will substitute quantity for quality, and you will pay a price. You have a base of power, a group of people, small or large, which identifies with you. This base is also mental, ideas you had when you were younger, which were tied to powerful emotions and inspired you to take a particular path. Time and success tend to diffuse the sense of connection you have to this physical and mental base. You will drift, and your powers of communication will diminish. Know your base and work to reconnect with it. Keep your associations with it alive, intense, and present. Return to your origins, the source of all inspiration and power. Alone, in our minds, we can imagine we have all kinds of powers and abilities. Our egos can inflate to any size. But when we produce something that fails to have the expected impact, we are suddenly faced with a limit. We are not as brilliant or skilled as we had imagined. In such a case, our tendency is to blame others for not understanding it or getting in our way. Our egos are bruised and delicate. Criticism from the outside seems like a personal attack, which we cannot endure. We tend to close ourselves off, and this makes it doubly difficult to succeed with our next venture. Instead of turning inward, consider people's coolness to your idea and their criticisms as a kind of mirror they are holding up to you. A physical mirror turns you into an object. You can see yourself as others see you. Your ego cannot protect you. The mirror does not lie. You use it to correct your appearance and avoid ridicule. The opinions of other people serve a similar function. You view your work from inside your mind, encrusted with all kinds of desires and fears. They see it as an object. They see it as it is. Through their criticisms, you can get closer to this objective version and gradually improve what you do. One caveat: beware of feedback from friends whose judgments could be tainted by feelings of envy or the need to flatter.
Chapter 8. Respect the process. Master it. The fools in life want things fast and easy. Money, success, attention. Boredom is their great enemy and fear. Whatever they manage to get slips through their hands as fast as it comes in. You, on the other hand, want to outlast your rivals. You are building the foundation for something that can continue to expand. To make this happen, you will have to serve an apprenticeship. You must learn early on to endure the hours of practice and drudgery, knowing that in the end, all of that time will translate into a higher pleasure. Mastery of a craft and of yourself. Your goal is to reach the ultimate skill level, an intuitive feel for what must come next.
For our most primitive ancestors, life was a constant struggle, entailing endless labor to secure food and shelter. If there was any free time, it generally was reserved for rituals that would give meaning to such a hard life. Then, over thousands of years of civilization, life gradually became easier for many. And with that came more and more free time. In such moments, there was no need to work the fields or worry about enemies or the elements. And suddenly, a new emotion was born into this world: boredom. To escape boredom at all cost, to distract ourselves from these anxieties. The principal means of distraction are all forms of public entertainment, drugs and alcohol, and social activities. But such distractions have a drug-like effect. They wear off. We crave new ones, faster ones, to lift us out of ourselves and divert us from the harsh realities of life and creeping boredom. This is the pattern that boredom has created for the human animal ever since. We look outside ourselves for diversions and grow dependent on them. These entertainments have a faster pace than the time we spend at work. Work, then, is experienced as something boring, slow, and repetitive. Anything challenging, requiring effort, is viewed the same way. It's not fun. It's not fast. If we go far enough in this direction, we find it increasingly difficult to muster the patience to endure the hard work that is required for mastering any kind of craft. It becomes harder to spend time alone. Life becomes divided between what is necessary, time at work, and what is pleasurable, distractions and entertainment. In the past, these extremes of boredom assailed mostly those in the upper classes. Now it is something that plagues almost all of us. Having the larger goal will lift your mind out of the moment and help you endure the hard work and drudgery. As you become better at this task or craft, it becomes increasingly pleasurable. You see your improvement. You see connections and possibilities you hadn't noticed before. Your mind becomes absorbed in mastering it further, And in this absorption, you forget all your problems, fears for the future, or people's nasty games. You are developing a lifelong skill, the kind of mental discipline that will serve as the foundation of your power. To make this work, you must choose a career or a craft that excites you in some deep way. When we look at those who stand out in history, we tend to focus on their achievements. From such an angle, it is easy for us to be dazzled and see their success as stemming from genetics and perhaps some social factors. They are gifted. We could never reach their level, or so we think. But we are choosing to ignore that telling period in their lives, when each and every one of them underwent a rather tedious apprenticeship in their field. As children learning language, we all undergo the same process. At first, we experience a level of frustration. We have desires and needs we wish to express, but we lack the words. Slowly, we pick up phrases and absorb patterns of speech. We accumulate vocabulary, word by word. Some of this is tedious, but we are impelled by our intense curiosity and hunger for knowledge. At a certain point, we attain a level of fluency in which we can communicate as fast as we think. Soon we don't have to think at all. Words come naturally, and at times when we are inspired, they flow out of us in ways we cannot even explain. At such a point, we either give in to our frustration and give up the process, or we proceed, intuiting the power that lies just around the corner. Slowly, our ability rises and the frustration lowers. We don't need to think so much. We are surprised by our fluency and connections that come to us in a flash. Once we reach a certain level of mastery, we see there are higher levels and challenges. If we are disciplined and patient, we proceed. At each higher level, new pleasures and insights await us, ones not even suspected when we started out. We can take this as far as we want. In any human activity, there is always a higher level to which we can aspire. Today, however, we have reached a dangerous point in which this elemental wisdom is being forgotten. Much of this is due to the destructive side of technology. We all understand its immense benefits and the power it has brought us. But with the intense speed and ease with which we can get what we want, a new pattern of thinking has evolved. We are by nature creatures of impatience. It has always been hard for us to want something and not have the capacity to get it. The increased speed from technology accentuates this childish aspect of our character. The slow accumulation of knowledge seems unnecessarily boring. Learning should be fun, fast, and easy. On the internet, we can make instant connections, skimming along the surface from one subject to the next. We come to value breadth of knowledge over depth, the power to move here or there, rather than digging deeper to the source of a problem and finding out how things tick. The real secret, the real formula for power in this world, lies in accepting the ugly reality that learning requires a process. And this in turn demands patience and the ability to endure drudge work. It is not sexy or seductive at first glance, but this truth is based on something real and substantial, an age-old wisdom that will never be overturned. The key is the level of your desire. If you are really after power and mastery, then you will absorb this idea deeply and engrave it in your mind. There are no shortcuts. When you take the time to master a simple process and overcome a basic insecurity, you develop certain skills that can be applied to anything. You see instantly the reward that comes from patience, practice, and discipline. You have the sense that you can tackle almost any problem in the same way. You create for yourself a pattern of confidence that will continue to rise. Often when you begin a project of any kind, it is from the wrong end. You tend to think first of what you want to accomplish, imagining the glory and money it will bring you if it succeeds. You then proceed to make this concept come to life. But as you go forward, you often lose patience, because the small steps to get there are not nearly as exciting as the ambitious visions in your head. You must try instead the opposite approach, which can lead to very different results. You have a project you wish to bring to life, but you begin by immersing yourself in the details of the subject or field. You look at the materials you have to work with, the tastes of your target audience, and the latest technical advances in the field. You take pleasure in going deeper and deeper into these fine points. Your research is intense. From this knowledge, you shape the project itself, grounding it in reality rather than in airy concepts in your head. Operating this way helps you slow your mind down and develop patience for detailed work, an essential skill for mastering any craft. Try to look at boredom from the opposite perspective, as a call for you to slow yourself down, to stop searching for endless distractions. This might mean forcing yourself to spend time alone, overcoming that childish inability to sit still. When you work through such self-imposed boredom, you will find your mind clicks into gear. New and unexpected thoughts will come to you to fill the void. To feel inspired, you must first experience a moment of emptiness. Use such moments to assess the day that went by, to measure where you are headed. It is a relief to not feel that constant need for outside entertainment. On a higher level of this re-education, you might choose a book to overcome your boredom. But instead of reading being a passive process of diversion, you actively mentally engage the author in an argument or discussion, making the book come to life in your head. At a further point, you take up a side activity, cultural or physical, that requires a repetitive process to master. You discover a calming effect in the repetitive element itself. In this way, boredom becomes your great ally. It helps you to slow things down, develop patience and self-discipline. Through this process, you will be able to withstand the inevitable empty moments of life and convert them into your own private pleasures.
Chapter 9. Push beyond your limits. Self-belief. Your sense of who you are will determine your actions and what you end up getting in life. If you see your reach is limited, that you are mostly helpless in the face of so many difficulties, that it's best to keep your ambitions low, then you will receive the little that you expect. Knowing this dynamic, you must train yourself for the opposite. Ask for more, aim high, and believe that you are destined for something great. Your sense of self-worth comes from you alone, never the opinion of others. With the rising confidence in your abilities, you will take risks that will increase your chances of success. People follow those who know where they're going, so cultivate an air of certainty and boldness.
Let me point out to you that freedom is not something that anybody can be given. Freedom is something people take, and people are as free as they want to be. Your opinion of yourself becomes your reality. If you have all these doubts, then no one will believe in you, and everything will go wrong. If you think the opposite will happen. It's that simple. When you were born, you entered this world with no identity or ego. You were simply a bundle of chaotic impulses and desires. But slowly, you acquired a personality that you have more or less built upon over the years. You are outgoing or shy, bold or skittish, a mix of various traits that defines you. You tend to accept this personality as something very real and established. But much of this identity is shaped and constructed by outside forces, the opinions and judgments of hundreds of other people who have crossed your path over the years. This process began with your parents. As a child, you paid extra close attention to what they said about you, modeling your behavior to win their approval and love. You closely monitored their body language to see what they liked and didn't like. Much of this had a tremendous impact on your evolution. If, for example, they commented about your shyness, it could easily strengthen any tendencies you had in that direction. you suddenly became aware of your own awkwardness, and it stuck inside you. If they had said something different, trying to encourage you in your social skills and draw you out, it might have had a much different impact. Either way, shyness is a fluid quality. It fluctuates according to the situation and the people you are around. It should never be felt as a set personality trait. And yet these judgments from parents, friends, and teachers are given inordinate weight and become internalized. It is frustrating and often frightening for people to think they cannot figure someone out. Behavior that is considered abnormal or different, which may very well be coming from somewhere deep within you, is actively discouraged. Envy plays a role as well. If you are too good at something, you might be made to feel strange or undesirable. Even the praise of others is often designed to hem you in to certain ideals they want to see in you. Understand, you are in fact a mystery to yourself. You began life as someone completely unique, a mix of qualities that will never be repeated in the history of the universe. There is another, fearless way of approaching your life. It begins by untying yourself from the opinions of others. This is not as easy as it sounds. You are breaking a lifelong habit of continually referring to other people when measuring your value. You must experiment and feel the sensation of not concerning yourself with what others think or expect of you. You do not advance or retreat with their opinions in mind. You drown out their voices that often translate into doubts inside you. Instead of focusing on the limits you have internalized, you think of the potential you have for new and different behavior. Your personality can be altered and shaped by your conscious decision to do so. People are drawn to those who act boldly, and their attention and faith in you will have the effect of heightening your confidence. If you are dependent on their judgments for your sense of worth, then your ego will always be weak and fragile. You will have no center or sense of balance. You will wilt under criticisms and soar too high with any praise. Their opinions are merely helping you shape your work, not your self-image. If you make mistakes, if the public judges you negatively, you have an unshakable inner core that can accept such judgments, but you remain convinced of your own worth. People who want power so badly must have psychological problems, or so we think. Much of this social prudery around the idea of power and ambition comes from an unconscious guilt and desire to keep other people down. To those occupying a position of privilege, the ambitiousness of those from below seems like something scary and threatening. Understand, people will constantly attack you in life. One of their main weapons will be to instill in you doubts about yourself, your worth, your abilities, your potential. They will often disguise this as their objective opinion, but invariably it has a political purpose. They want to keep you down. In every moment of life, you can defy and deny people this power. You do so by maintaining a sense of purpose, a high destiny you are fulfilling. Many will argue that this idea of active freedom is basically an illusion. We are products of our environment, so they say. If people become successful, it is because they benefited from certain favorable social circumstances. They were in the right place at the right time. They got the proper education and mentoring. Their willpower played a part, no doubt, but a small part. If circumstances were different, so the argument goes, these types would not have had the success they had, no matter how strong their willpower. People judge you by appearances, the image you project through your actions, words, and style. If you do not take control of this process, then people will see and define you the way they want to, often to your detriment. You might think that being consistent with this image will make others respect and trust you, but in fact, it is the opposite. Over time, you seem predictable and weak. Consistency is an illusion anyway. Each passing day brings changes within you. You must not be afraid to express these evolutions. The powerful learn early in life that they have the freedom to mold their image, fitting the needs and moods of the moment. In this way, they keep others off balance and maintain an air of mystery. You must follow this path and find great pleasure in reinventing yourself, as if you were the author writing your own drama. What often prevent us from using the mental fluidity and freedom that we naturally possess are the physical routines in our lives. We see the same people and do the same things, and our minds follow these patterns. The solution, then, is to break this up. For instance, we could deliberately indulge in some random, even irrational act, perhaps doing the very opposite of what we would normally do in our day-to-day life. By taking an action we have never done before, we place ourselves in unfamiliar territory. Our minds naturally awaken to the novel situation. In a similar vein, we can force ourselves to take different routes, visit strange places, encounter different people, wake up at odd hours, or read books that challenge our minds instead of dull them. We should practice this when we feel particularly blocked and uncreative. The higher your self-belief, the more your power to transform reality. Having supreme confidence makes you fearless and persistent, allowing you to overcome obstacles that stop most people in their tracks. You have a set of skills and experiences that make you unique. They point towards some life task that you were meant to accomplish. You see signs of this in the predilections of your youth, certain tasks you were naturally drawn to. It is always easy to rationalize your own doubts and conservative instincts, particularly when times are tough. You will convince yourself that it is foolhardy to take any risks, that it is better to wait for when circumstances are more propitious. But this is a dangerous mentality. It signifies an overall lack of confidence in yourself that will carry over to better times. You will find it hard to rouse yourself out of your defensive posture. The truth is that the greatest inventions and advances in technology or business generally come in negative periods, because there is a greater necessity for creative thinking and radical solutions that break with the past. So many people who attain the heights of power in this culture, celebrities for instance, have to make a show of false humility and modesty, as if they got as far as they did by accident and not by ego or ambition. They want to act as if they are no different from anyone else and are almost embarrassed by their power and success. These are all signs of a weak ego. As an egotist of the strong variety, you trumpet your individuality and take great pride in your accomplishments. If others cannot accept that or judge you as arrogant, that is their problem, not yours.
Are you ready to get your mind right?
What's good, people? It's your man, Estat. And we have been listening to The 50th Floor by hip-hop entrepreneur Curtis 50 Cent Jackson and author Robert Greene. That was Chapter 9. Now I want to play for you a treat. Flashback, a moment in time. What we're going to do right here is we're going to go back, way back, back in time. Live in 85 at Y Dance High School with DJ Rob Swift on the 1 and 2. And two MCs who you may know, Biz Markie and another one by the name of Kid Wizard. Let's see those of you who recognize who Kid Wizard is today. We'll be back in a minute.
Showtime. Let's go.
1-2-1-2. And the place to be. The love kid with the rock hammers in the house. I came all the way up here to tear shit up, you know what I'm saying? I was home chilling in the bed. But check it out. Super B is on the mic showing you those tricks.
Microphone level, old boy.
Give him a scrap.
Check that out.
Let's check it out. You go bump with the rhythm, delay with the bass. My name is Duncan Whitman and I'm in the place. So check it out, y'all, and then you don't stop. Because the beat is got to be the short shot. I never stop, y'all, the body rock, y'all.
Body.
You call me Kid Whitman on pop, y'all. The president of poetry is what I am. You can call me Wiz, the call me Rakim. The one time I rock a mic, it's so unique. So check it out, y'all, because I'm reaching my peak. Because I'm the K, the I, and then comes the G. The W-I, don't forget the G. The mellow MC fellow, I'm serving as well. One thing I do for sure, I never give up to myself. The kid with it, the kid with it. Ask your whole boy, here's tell you who is it. Yup, I'm so nice and I'm so explicit. The BBs that we know, then what is it?
I like that. It's like back and up, it's like back and up, it's like back and up, up to the beat, y'all.
Don't reach, y'all. It don't stop, well, I don't act conceited. Don't brag on me.
The one that comes to stay around with, I got the most
word
than anybody else. Just an MC, bitch. So if they ask you who's the best, tell them who it is, tell them this, or the business, or this, my P, or either way you add it up. It equals me, I got the soul of a singer, the beat of a drummer. I didn't get to be number one in a hum, but then again,
right. Rock Camp, Biz Markie, live in 85 for Wynette High School. All right, winding down, folks. Got 9 minutes to go, and I want to go out with the classic. That's the joint. Funky Four plus one more. Shaman S. Dot, send us an email at the S. Dot Files at gmail.com. Follow us on Facebook or Twitter / the S dot files. That's THESDOTFILES. Until next episode, it's your man S dot Holler. Do it, too. The party people in the place is just for you to get down, get
on the mic like I know I could,
like I know we should,
and like I know I would.
Keep.
I rock the house.
Keep.
I rock top rock, turn it on, you know that.
And he got
the finesse to be, hold that.
He's the gun.
Keeping on too.
I know you're out there. I can feel you now. I know that you're afraid. You're afraid of us. You're afraid of change. I don't know the future. I didn't come here to tell you how this is going to end. I came here to tell you how it's going to begin. I'm going to hang up this phone, and then I'm going to show these people what you don't want them to see. I'm going to show them a world without you. A world without rules and controls, without borders or boundaries. A world where anything is possible. Where we go from there is a choice I leave to you.